This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. This coming election day, Massachusetts voters will decide whether using, selling, and prescribing marijuana for medical purposes should be legal under state law. Question three is one of three ballot initiatives voters will face on November 6th.
If approved, the law would allow patients with debilitating conditions like cancer, glaucoma, and AIDS, among others, to get a doctor's permission to obtain a 60-day supply of marijuana for personal use. The Department of Public Health would oversee up to 35 dispensaries across the state, while doctors would authorize personal caregivers to obtain and administer marijuana to patients who need it.
The law would also impose stiff penalties, up to 5 years in jail, for those convicted of trafficking marijuana for non-medical use. With a yes vote, Massachusetts would join 17 other states, including three right here in New England, and the District of Columbia, that have all legalized medical marijuana.
Opponents to question three include the Massachusetts Chiefs of Police Association and the Massachusetts Medical Society, which represents 24,000 physicians across the state. The push in favor is led by the Committee for Compassionate Medicine, along with a variety of patient advocacy groups.
So, listeners, where do you stand on question three? We want to hear from you. Does it make sense to legalize medical marijuana in Massachusetts? Are you someone who benefits from marijuana? Or do you oppose the do you oppose legalization? And if so, why? Give us a call at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. And joining me now here in the studio is Peter Hayashi. He suffers from allodynia. We're going to explain what that is. And he uses marijuana to treat his pain. He's also a former clinical neuropsychologist and professor of neurology and psychiatry at Harvard Medical School. And Peter Hayashi, thanks for coming in. Welcome.
Thank you. I want to correct something.
Sure.
I was not a professor. I was on faculty at Harvard Medical School, but
Good. Thank you for the correction. I stand corrected, and forgive me for that misidentification. In any event, you are here in favor of question three, and for you, it's personal. Tell us, if you would, what allodynia is, and then how marijuana helps you.
It's a type of pain. I've been disabled by severe nerve pain for about the past 10 years. Allodynia is a part of that pain complex. It's basically a result of my nervous system being bombarded by too much pain. And for me, I have this sensitivity, this allodynia on my half of my body where light touch and temperature changes are extremely painful, such that I have to wear special clothing basically from head to toe to protect myself as well as I can. And I'm in bed on my side for many hours a day.
Well, I'm sorry to hear this. It sounds like a really difficult condition. Tell us, give us a sense of what marijuana does for you.
Well, it is, I see it as part of my pain treatment. I take multiple prescription medications and do other things for pain management. Medical marijuana addresses some of the pain that the other medications do not. For example, there have been times where I've been essentially bedridden from the pain, and a small bit of vaporized medical marijuana allows me to get up, walk, cook, or do something to help my son with his homework or something. So I'm much more functional at times when the pain is really bad, if I have medical marijuana.
So a yes vote on question three would help you in pretty sort of material and obvious ways. It would make access to medical marijuana legal, for one thing.
Correct.
Say more about that. Why would you be in favor? How would it help you?
Well, it would provide access for me and for other pain patients and other patients with debilitating illnesses. It would stop money from going into the black market now, which weighs heavily, I think, on a lot of people's mind who are caught in my position.
And what do you, I'm interested in what kind of responses you have from your medical colleague. We mentioned that you're a former clinical neuropsychologist and part of the faculty at the Harvard Medical School. What do you hear from your fellow doctors?
Well, frankly, I haven't discussed this with many, but with a few friends I have, they're very supportive. They can see the obvious improvement or hear about it from me, and I've had no one say that it's a bad idea or ill-considered idea.
Well, Peter Hayashi, thank you for coming in, and please stand by. I want to introduce a couple of other people into this conversation. Matthew Allen is director of the Massachusetts Patient Advocacy Alliance. He's an employee of the Committee for Compassionate Medicine. That's the coalition working to pass Question 3 here in Massachusetts. And Matthew Allen, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming in. And joining us from WAMU in Washington, D.C. is Dr. Kevin Sabet. He's a former senior advisor to the Obama administration's director of the Office of National Drug Control Policy, director of the Drug Policy Institute at the University of Florida, and the president of Policy Solutions Group, a drug policy consulting company in Cambridge, Mass. And Kevin Sabet, thank you for joining us. Much
appreciated. Great to be on public radio. Thank you.
So, Kevin, let me start with you, if I could. You heard what Peter Hayashi had to say. He's one of many people across the U.S. who now uses marijuana for medical purposes. Why not legalize this, put it under state control, regulation, help more people like Peter? What's the problem?
Well, I've met Peter, and clearly he's very genuine, and he has a debilitating condition for which I and many others have compassion for. So let's put that out there first. If this question three, this referenda that people will vote on in November, was about people like Peter and was written in a way that would only allow those with rare debilitating illnesses or those with excruciating conditions like neuropathic pain as related to cancer or wasting as related to HIV, I don't think we'd be having this debate. Mm. Unfortunately, question three is written in such a broad way that it would set up in the first year at least 36 marijuana stores for which anybody could go in and get marijuana for any illness for which any doctor they found said that it would provide relief. So, you know, what you're going to have here is a few unscrupulous doctors making money off of people saying that they need marijuana for relaxation or headaches. And that's what we see in most states that have this right now. Less than 2% of people in all of these 17 states that you mentioned are getting marijuana for conditions like cancer, glaucoma, MS, or AIDS. So it was just...
Is it possible then to write the law better so that we could just help people like Peter and keep the other folks who just, you know, want to figure out a way to get marijuana to get high out of the conversation?
Right. Well, that would be a start. But unfortunately, where the money has come from this initiative and where this whole movement comes from is one that wants to legalize marijuana outright. And they've been very transparent that that's the, you know, there's a YouTube video actually out there saying that, you know, it was decrim in 2008 in Massachusetts. It'll be medical in 2012 and boasting and bragging about legalization in 2016. So if this was really about medicine and about doctors' relationship, we wouldn't have groups like the Mass Medical Society coming out against this. We wouldn't have people like, you know, Dorchester Democrat Marty Walsh coming out against this and others. But this isn't written in that way.
All right, Kevin Sabet. Well, let me get Matthew Allen, director of Mass Patient Advocacy Alliance, to respond to some of that. First of all, Matthew, you can respond any way you want, but let's start with this idea. Is this sort of step one to an overall push to legalize marijuana?
No, absolutely not. And the fact is that we've been working for years to support this reform, and we're a grassroots group of patients. We're a single-issue group that only supports safe access to medical marijuana and does not advocate for any other reform. I think I've seen the YouTube that Kevin is talking about, and you know, that was done by someone who's not associated with this campaign. I can certainly go online and find examples of folks who believe that any patient who even touches a medical marijuana should be locked away. And I don't think that's the position of Kevin Sabet. So I don't think it's helpful to the dialogue to make those
Well, let me ask the question, because there's good reason to suspect that's the case. I mean, the main sponsor of Question 3 and the Committee of for Compassionate Medicine has been financed largely by Peter Lewis, right? I mean, the Ohio businessman, he's well known as an advocate for legalizing marijuana all across the country.
Well, the history of our organization is that, like I said, we've been around for years organizing patients, caregivers, medical professionals, doctors, and public health groups. I mean, look at our endorsers, AIDS Action Committee, Mass Nurses Association, the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, New England Coalition of Cancer Survivorship. The list goes on and on. I don't think it's realistic to think that we somehow pulled the wool over all these folks' eyes with some kind of trick to try to completely legalize marijuana. But if you look at the history of our group, we've existed on a shoestring budget, sometimes just on a volunteer basis. Mm. We did turn to foundations and funders to ask for support when it became clear that once again we were hitting roadblocks at the legislature. And we were very grateful for that financial support that's letting us bring this to Massachusetts voters. And ultimately, that's what this is about. What do voters in Massachusetts want to see?
And Kevin Sabet, I'll bring you back in the conversation. But Matthew Allen, first respond to Kevin Sabet's concern about this law has been written so loosely that it's not going to just help people like Peter sitting here, but it's going to pretty much be open to anyone who wants free marijuana or legal marijuana.
I think that some of the concerns that Kevin mentions are really based on what we've seen in some of the other states, such as Colorado or California, which really do not have proposals that are regulated to nearly the level that we're going to see here in Massachusetts. The first medical marijuana law was passed in California back in 1996. So we've had years and years and years to learn about what are the best practices to allow patients safe access while including the regulations to prevent abuse. Limiting the treatment centers is going to go a long way to do that. We're talking about 35 across the whole state as opposed to nearly 1,000 in L.A. alone. Mm. There's no wonder you look at a place like L.A. and you're like, wow, is there abuse going on here?
Mm. Well, you say it's going to be limited to 35. Kevin Sabet, you say there's going to be 35, as though that's a lot. I mean, what's the problem here?
Well, let's be clear about, and I'm happy to move away from the supporters who clearly have legalization in mind and just look at the language of the law, because that's what people will be voting on. Yes, 35 in the first year, that's actually written much more broadly than California's law, which did not have any dispensaries. In fact, California had no dispensaries, and in fact, many people think they're illegal according to their medical marijuana. For 7 years, they didn't have a dispensary. So right off the bat, we start off with 35. It can be expanded at any time. And the other issue is that this initiative is going to allow people to carry up to a 60-day supply of marijuana on their person. I mean, if you ask people what a 60-day supply is, it could range anything from, let's be conservative and say, 2 marijuana joints or 3 marijuana brownies. You're saying that you can hold up, you know, at least 120 joints or 360 or 180 brownies.
But in fairness, I mean, I'm looking at the language here. The Department of Health, if I have this correctly, is going to define what that means within 3 months of the law being passed.
Well, and that's why I'm defining it as conservatively as possible. I still think that's written, and I think most people would say that's a lot. So again, if we could sit down and do this in a rational, reasonable way, and write this in a way that was much tighter, we may be having a different conversation. The other issue here is that it lists a bunch of illnesses, and if you read the language. It says any other condition as determined in writing by a qualifying patient's physician. And a qualifying patient, by the way, is anybody of any age. So I just don't see how this has been written in any way that is worrying about loopholes.
Well, Matthew Allen, we've got a lot of folks on who want to get in on this conversation who are calling in, but I wanted to get you to respond to Kevin Sabet. And let me just throw this one idea out at you that I've observed in California that's had legalized medical marijuana for a while. I mean, I know, and this is, you hear this again and again. I mean, I know a young man who's a son of a family of friends of ours, who literally, it's just a joke when he went out there. He got his medical marijuana certificate because of a bum knee, and he called up and happily told his parents in New Hampshire, "Hey, mom, dad, I got my marijuana card." And for him, it was just like woo wee. And I think that's the concern that a law like this is opening among the concerns that a law like this is bringing about.
Yeah, we understand those concerns, and that's why we've addressed them in this legislation. I think no one has more to lose than us, the patients and advocates who have been working on this reform, if the system is not well regulated, because we've seen in other states like California where those concerns do come up, that then local authorities and authorities at the state level try to roll those programs back. So we know for the system to actually work and to be strong and meet patients' needs, we've got to include those regulations. It's true in California, you do hear stories of patients going into treatment centers, and there's a doctor who works out of the treatment center, and patients walk out with medicine. That's not how it's going to work here in Massachusetts. One of the differences is that we will require each patient to register with the state. So after getting that written recommendation, they need to mail it into the Department of Public Health and have it verified. So DPH will have a database of all the patients who are enrolled in the program, and all the doctors have written recommendations. Therefore, we're not going to see the unintended consequence that Kevin fears, where you have just a few doctors writing hundreds or thousands of recommendations, because if they do, that's immediately going to raise some red flags.
Yeah, but once again, the way this law is written in Massachusetts is a two-tiered system. One is the dispensaries, and the idea that we're calling them a treatment center when treatment is about addiction, which is a hot public health disease, makes, again, it's an interesting rhetorical exercise. But what they are marijuana storefronts, and so that they are going to be registered. However, this two-tier system allows the second tier, which is people to be cultivating for anyone, and anybody can say they can't afford to buy it, and then they're going to be allowed to grow them themselves. So there are loopholes here. By the way, the idea that state employees are going to be handling an illicit substance and handing it out, we've seen in other states how the federal government has said, you know, wait a minute here. I mean, that is violating federal law. State employees will be at risk of arrest, they've said in Washington state, for example. So
I'm going to get to that issue, but yeah. Kevin Sabat, bear with me. Sure. I want to get some callers in here because there are a lot of folks with a lot of questions. Let's go to John, who's calling from Brockton. John, you're on the air.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
First of all, I want to say that, you know, I'm going to vote yes for this for a number of reasons, and I'm also coming at the viewpoint of being a recovering addict who's been clean for over 26 years, and I have friends of mine who have cancer that have had to go to the street to get the marijuana, and they're using other drugs too, but it seems to be with using the combination of the drugs and the marijuana seems to alleviate their pain a lot better than if they didn't have the marijuana. So I certainly have a concern for them in that if they, you know, they have a tough enough life to begin with, and then they have to worry about being arrested possibly as a result of having to go get this drug that helps them in their for their pain. So,
John, you put a good point on the table, and let me put that to Kevin Sabat. And Kevin, there's John from Brockton talking about people going out on the street and getting the marijuana. Right. I mean, this brings to the front the big question about the war on drugs.
Right.
It hasn't worked. I mean, people are going to go get the drugs that they want. Mm-hmm. So why not bring it under state state regulation and try to make it as safe as possible?
Well, first of all, we know that the people in Massachusetts are not being arrested and locked away for marijuana use and possession. So this idea of fear of being locked up as a cancer patient getting marijuana is totally unfounded. There's nobody who being arrested and in jail in Massachusetts. We decriminalized 4 years ago, even before decriminalization. People, you know, if you ask law enforcement, are you spending your resources on, you know, looking for Aunt Tilly who has, you know, cancer and trying to arrest her for marijuana, they would laugh. So that isn't happening. But the issue with people like John's friends that he's talking about is that I don't think everybody is lying who's saying that they're getting relief for marijuana. We know that the marijuana plant actually has 500 constituents in it. We know a little bit about 10 of them and we know that some of them can have medicinal value. And so, but the issue is just like opium is a plant with many constituents, many of which have medicinal value, many of which don't. We isolated morphine, for example, out of opium, and we deliver morphine in a safe way. We don't ask people to smoke opium to get the benefits of morphine. Why would we ask people to smoke crude raw marijuana, which cannot be dosed, we cannot have consistency between each batch? Why would we ask them to smoke marijuana to get those effects? Let's do the research, and we are. There are, you know, there's
a multi-million
dollar effort.
But is that happening? I don't know if the Food and Drug Administration is moving with any sort of dispatch or commitment to...
There are actually dozens of studies. I invite people to go on clinicaltrials.gov. In fact, you may callers who have debilitating illnesses may qualify to receive marijuana or marijuana-based medications if you go on clinicaltrials.gov. There are drugs like Sativex. Sativex is a British drug. It's a mouth spray, an oral mouth spray, which is a combination of two active ingredients in marijuana, THC, which we've known for a long time,
right,
and a new element called CBD. And CBD has actually been bred out of modern street marijuana because CBD reverses the high. It does not make you high.
Okay, Kevin, we get the point. Yeah, I want to give Matthew a chance to respond to this. So one of the arguments here, marijuana hasn't been subjected to the sort of rigorous testing from places like the FDA. What response
well,
to that?
First, a couple things. I mean, I think it's important that we emphasize that we're not talking about smoked marijuana. That's not what we're talking about. talking about patients can administer the medicine through a tincture, through a vaporizer, which is a device that heats it to the point where the active ingredients are released without combusting it. I also want to make a point that Kevin says patients under decriminalizations are not facing arrest, but the truth is what they are facing, even if possessing an ounce or less of marijuana, trying to find their medicine on the street is, and we have patients who've been there, who have been assaulted by drug dealers, who have been robbed. And that's not the situation you want, say, a 65-year-old breast cancer survivor going into. They try to grow one seedling. Now they're looking at not decriminalization but a felony offense. They could lose their house. Regarding the FDA approval process, I think there's a lot of differences between sort of the analogy that Kevin made and medical marijuana. First of all, medical marijuana has not just one active molecule but more than 60 active cannabinoids with therapeutic value. Secondly, it's impossible to overdose on medical marijuana. Certainly, we can control the consistency of the medicine just by the fact that plants can be cloned and maintain consistency that way. But one of the reasons that dosage is less of an issue and patients can titrate their dose until they get the desired effect is, unlike heroin, you're never going to overdose on medical marijuana. And finally, that point about FDA approval, it is true that the whole reason we've had to come to the state level to pass these reforms is that for years and years, scientific research at the federal level has been hopelessly obstructed. And the reason is that marijuana is the only drug for which the federal government has a monopoly on the supply for research. They grow it at, or distribute it through the National Institute of Drug Abuse, which is an agency that is very clear that they don't support research into the medicinal use of marijuana. There's a few token examples, but generally they research the abuse potential.
Let me try to get one more call in here at least. Debbie is calling from Acton. Hi, Debbie. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you? I'm very interested in this discussion, so thank you for having us. And, you know, one of the things I was wondering and maybe asked your guest about is, you know, we have a similar situation, I think, with a lot of prescription medications, OxyContin and Percocet and all kinds of other things that people can get for pain relief are also, you know, potential addictive substances, and there's a black market for them on the streets. And I'm wondering why marijuana is somehow being singled out as not being controllable through medical means as opposed to any of these other situations that we have. I think there's an analogy there, and I think, you know, the law can be applied, you know, so as to try to keep these things in a medical setting. And it's true that we have problems in other areas, but we don't go around saying, well, you, no doctors can prescribe any painkillers.
I got it, Debbie. It's a great point. It's a good question. Let me put that to Kevin Sabet.
Sure. I mean, it is a great question. In fact, obviously, there are myriad number of medications that are more addictive than marijuana that are legal and that are available to be prescribed. But they're legal and available because they've shown in clinical trials with double-blind studies and informed consent that they've shown over time that these individual drugs can be safe and effective when used in a proper way. They're also isolated components of things like the opium plant. So the examples the caller brought up, these opiates, you cannot compare raw marijuana with these different opiates that can be more addictive and are deadly. I mean, prescription drug abuse is the number one drug problem in this country. More prescription drug related deaths than car crashes last year, which is an astounding fact.
But Kevin, the point is we've isolated those elements.
I
heard that, and it's a good point, but isn't this a case that the horses are sort of out of the barn here? I mean, 17 states, the District of Columbia. I mean, I know you say you can't compare, you know, smoking more raw marijuana with a pure drug like synthetic drug like oxycodone, but I'm not sure why you can't if so many people are claiming that they benefit from it.
So it's 2% of people in these states are there for a life-threatening or chronic illness. The vast majority are there for a general pain, headaches, relaxation, etc. The American Medical Association, National Cancer Society, all major medical associations are against these sort of state-level voting on medicine because we have a scientific process. And one thing Matt said earlier, the vast majority of medical marijuana in these states is smoked. So let's deliver marijuana in an isolated format for those who really need it, not open it up with all these loopholes.
We're out of time. Matthew Allen, I'm going to give you the last 10 seconds here to wrap this up for us.
Well, we know for sure that medical marijuana is safe and it works. It's the most widely studied plant on the face of the earth.
And the debate is going to continue. Question 3, Election Day, Massachusetts voters. Matthew Allen, Director of Mass Patient Advocacy Alliance, thanks for coming in. We appreciate it. And Kevin Sabet, former senior advisor to the Obama administration's Director of the Office of National Drug Policy. He's also the president of Policy Solutions Group in Cambridge. Thank you, Kevin Sabet.
Thank you.
And Peter Hayashi, a patient who uses medical marijuana, we wish you the best. Good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Coming up, a new discovery holds promise for kids with a rare advancing aging disease. I'm Anthony Brooks with Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.